Welcome to the BFM Historical Society. This week, we talk to Bevan Keyes and Peter Ehrlich of Nice and Ehrlich fame. They recall the surprise and joy of going from a humble Saturday morning radio show on BFM to becoming a nationwide household name with best-selling compilation CDs and gigantic club nights. Bevan Keyes and Peter Ehrlich, welcome to the BFM Historical Society.
Well, yes, this is stinky and I'm smelly. No, you're smelly and I'm stinky.
Yeah, get it right.
Or is it Nice and Ehrlich?
It is Nice and Ehrlich, and it's, you know, it's just fantastic to be here and finally have the real story told.
Peter Ehrlich, please tell us the first time you got involved in BFM, and can you remember when that was? I think it was after you were in a band called The Dudes.
Well, after that, I was in doing clubs, which was, you know, post rock and roll. I recognised there was also a living to be made out of playing other people's music on turntables. A friend of mine, Mark Phillips, and myself formed an alliance that was responsible for about 10 or 11 of the key clubs in Auckland at that time. We're talking basically a decade from 1980 to 1990-91. We were halfway through it. We were kind of pretty much near our height at a club called Berlin. Now, Berlin was owned by Johnny Tubler. It was underneath the Civic Theatre. It's gone now. Isn't it strange for me to say that? It's bricked in. It was downstairs on your way up Wellesley Street, opposite Smith & Coe's. And we'd had three or four places before that. And what we would do is we'd come in, find an existing club that was set up and not doing very well. We'd go to the owner and we'd say, listen, we can bring you a crowd in here straight away. We'd strike a deal here whereby, you know, financially it was good for both of us. And then we'd move in, do posters and set up some record players, big Sue and Vega speakers. And that's where it started. We'd always have a good name for each club. And Berlin was after a club called Zanzibar, which was in Fort Street. And we moved out of Fort Street and then we went up to a club that was already called Berlin, I must say. And this father-son team had it and they were tanking. And it was really sad. And we moved in. We said, listen, we can help. You've set up. You've got a cool space. It was a small club built around two staircases. And it was kind of like a New York club, wasn't it, Bev? It just had a funky feel. And we went down there. We said, listen, if you you run the bar and keep everything running and we'll bring in a crowd and we'll all make some money. So that's what happened. And it went off, you know, big time. People loved it. We had pool tables. We had mirrors everywhere, matte black, big speakers. And initially it was just mainly Mark and I playing the records and we'd kind of get them higgledy-piggledy. But they seemed to be working. It was kind of the when house was just starting to break, but we were still playing the kind of funk by Big Daddy Kane and people like that, and it was going down big. And we'd throw in a lot of stuff, and some memorable nights we had down there. Mick Jagger was in town, and I'll never forget him. You know, all of a sudden there was a kerfuffle. I was in the DJ box, and there was a bit of a kerfuffle, and I knew something was happening. I looked up, and a big crowd was coming down the stairs, his entourage, and in the middle was this wee, diminutive little man, but he had a huge aura, and he came down, and he was, you know, checking out the scene, and I thought, wow, this is so cool, Mick's here. They went and found him a spot where he could drink, and the girls flocked, and I can remember thinking, I have got to get him on the dance floor, whatever it takes, because that's to say that you've had Mick on the dance floor, and we did that, and it was just a fantastic experience. But
what did you play? What did you play to get him on the
dance
floor?
I'll tell you in a minute. The station that had the chutzpah, that had the attitude, was of course BFM, and at that stage they really were a stronghold for anything new, but they were really more based on rock. You know, it was kind of was a guitar-based station. And we went along and saw them. Mark Phillips went along and we talked to, I can't even remember who the station manager was at that time, but we said, we'd like to bring along something on a Saturday morning because we've got a strong weekend crowd listening to this style of music and you're not represented in this style. And to their credit, they said, yeah, fine. So Mark and I came in. I think we ended up doing I'm not sure, I think it was like midday or 1 o'clock or something like that. It was kind of early afternoon, Radio Berlin, Songs from the Vaults of Time. Wow. And Grant Chilcott, I remember, did our voiceover for our promo. And basically, Mark and I would come up and play. It was a disparate sort of playlist, but there was a lot of funk in there. And there was a lot of new stuff that people had never heard. It went, you know, really well for about, I think it was about almost 12 months. You know, we loved doing it and we got a good feedback. And of course, when you've got a club, the people can, you can say, and tonight we're playing this track. This is brand new, we're playing it. And of course, so it really worked for your club venue, because people would hear on the radio and then want to come and hear it on the dance floor. When they hear it on the dance floor, they just go mental, because that whole reinforcement thing. Late 86, and so that was the time of the radio show, Mark and I, and it was just a fantastic time. And this is the song that we got Mick Jagger on the dance floor with. I remember he grabbed a local beauty called Fiona Knapp. It was the daughter of Gary Knapp, the leader of the Social Credit Party, and they had a bit of an affair. From our very first ever compilation. This is the start of the compilations. We called it Eight Arms to Hold You. It was a compilation made by Simon, Greg, Mark Phillips and myself, and it went out via Sony Music, which was CBS in those days in Parnell, and this goes out to Gilbert and Murray Tom. This is Goon Squad,
Eight Arms to Hold You, produced by the one and only Arthur Baker. Nice and Ehrlich. Where did that come from?
Oh, that's legend, isn't it, really? I'm not sure whether Bevan's going to be able to help me because he wasn't there, but I can remember the day we were making a promo right here. There was some heavy-duty talent at BFM at that time, creatively. It was Bob and Scott.
Yep.
You know, and Bill, and God, what a team. You know, they were just always coming up with the most hilarious ideas, and the ads were as good as the music, I'd almost say. Anyway, we walked in there, and that stage, we didn't kind of have a name for the show. It had been going a little while, and I'm sure it was Bob, that said, well, what about Nice and Ehrlich? And we all just looked at him for a second, and then we all started laughing because he'd done a play on Nice and Early because it was so early on a Saturday morning. And he wrote it on the top of the ad sheet, and it just stuck. So really, 30% of all of our revenue goes to Bob. That's why he's driving around in that Camaro.
Yeah. Wasn't that lovely though? Because Bill Curtin was always on after us on a Saturday morning. That's where he often was. It was always humorous.
Yeah. Hi, Billy.
Now, Bevan, for the record, can you tell us when it was that you first got involved in doing a radio show with this fellow?
I was DJing at a club that Peter had called Bad News Barbie, and which was a club called Berlin years and years ago. I was just DJing there. A friend of mine, Stephen Green, got me a gig, and Peter was sitting at the bar.
Filing my nails.
Yeah, looking cool. And he came up to me, and he said, hey, this is a Kraftwerk track. I said, yeah, it is. And he gave me the old Peter Ehrlich, put the hand up. Yeah. I said, oh, yeah.
Cute.
Yeah. I said, Bevan Keys, how are you going? You know, and that was it.
Oh, you see, the part he left out was that his first job was at the club wasn't as a DJ, it was as a doorman. And then he started listening to a lot of the... No, go on, tell the story.
My very first club was the Brat.
You snuck in.
Truly.
What about Alfie's?
Oh, I was DJing. I used to
have to be embarrassed about it.
No, I'm not. I'm quite comfortable with... Yep. Thanks, Peter. But no. I used to go to the Brat, and that was my first nightclub. But my first club I DJed at was Alfie's, and which was down the road. Because when the Brat closed, we went to Alfie's, and then later on the Asylum opened, didn't it? And then we all went to the Asylum, which was huge. Because originally Phil Clark was doing the show, Clarky, and he was away. I think it was that Saturday, wasn't it, Matty? I can't remember now. Peter said, would you like to come and guest on the show? And I said, okay. So I came in and we'd had a great time together and I played all my tunes. I'd just got in some new stuff and we had a good laugh. And that was that for a few months. And then Peter got back to me, it would have been sort of 3 or 4 months later, and said, would you like to come on full time? Been a few changes here and there. And I said, yes, I would. That was, I think, just after I used to DJ at the Crowbar. So I would say it would be 95, would it?
95.
Yeah, 95.
I must reissue the statement that I said when we first started this interview, Patrick, is that dates aren't my strong point, and some of the details as well. So it's so good to have Bevan here, who doesn't touch alcohol or drugs. He can remember every single thing, so it's just fantastic.
There we go. So 95 was when you first kind of got involved doing the Saturday morning up here.
Yeah. I realised, by the way, the phones just started to light up and the people really turned on to the chemistry of the show, which was Bevan's music, and he had his own unique style, and I guess I glued it all together, and we did some, lots of laughs, wasn't it? It was.
We were
hungover, for God's sake.
Oh, we were. It was huge, those nights. But, I did have my own style, but I was influenced by Peter and guys like Simon. That was a thing. So we had this similar background, which... Yeah. Well, we clicked, it was really good.
And I can remember I was living across the road at Courtville Apartments, a beautiful Courtville Apartments. I lived there for many years. And basically I would run across here at 5 to 10, skip through the beautiful government gardens.
Yeah.
And that was always a wonderful walk into the studio. And you get up into the studio, and the studio was always a riot, Friday night, Alan and stuff. There was vomit everywhere. And there'd be people sleeping in the corridors and stuff. And we'd come in and I'd sit down and Bevan would stand at the decks and just kick off. And then I would just turn the mic on and then we'd just start the show and we'd often just talk over the top because, the house was nice to talk over.
Yeah.
And it was just it was magic straight away, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
And so there would just be the phone. And, of course, when you're trying to, that's why it wasn't possible for me to play the records because the phone was ringing so much. And we were just identifying and kind of gathering a clan together, weren't we, of people going, hey, we really like this, and you know, and my name's, so you get to know their name, and before too long, you kind of had this, you know, quite a large clan, and you knew that was Timmy, and that was Cheryl, and you know, they'd all call in there, and like us, they'd been out the night before, like us, they were feeling in a similar mindset, and like us, this is what they wanted to kind of ease them into whatever they were going to do.
After a hard night.
Yeah. So it had that definite feeling to it. It was more than just your standard radio show. It had
it became apparent after a little while that a lot of people were doing their housework on Saturday morning.
That's what they called it.
Yeah. Buzz. Yeah, it did seem to have be particularly good music to, you know, do a bit of vacuuming and housework. So because it wasn't the sort of tunes where you were hanging on every word. It was there were 7-minute groovy workouts, you know, expertly mixed by the maestro. I remember once he did a bad mix. Yeah, he did. I bumped it, that's why, because I... And then I'd jump up and try to do one, remember? Those are the days, and you'd go, okay, matey, and then you'd sort of... see me struggle, but they did get a real fine reputation as housework instead of house music. It was like housework.
We did a TV commercial once with a couple of slappers vacuuming the house. Yeah, I'm living with one of them now.
A couple of record companies were chasing us, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. But we were always pretty independent, weren't we? We wanted to do our own thing, and we couldn't. And it was pretty tricky to get clearance and stuff. We didn't know much about it. Peter had more experience than me, but so we put together a cassette, didn't we, originally?
Cassette.
It was a cassette, just to see how it would go. And we had, I think, did we get 12?
I think we did 20 copies. 20. A little outfit 20. In Onihonga would dub them for you. If anybody out there has one of those nice and rich, it had a little label on it, I think, didn't it?
It did, didn't it? Yeah.
And can you remember the tracks that were on that at all?
I honestly can't, what we put on
there. My God, I would give anything for that. I'll please contact us if you have... Yeah, we were being courted by two major record companies, and in the end, Festival offered us 6 Steinies and 2 Moro bars, and we took it. In fact, it was FMR Festival Mushroom, and we're very enthusiastic about what was happening with our style. And basically, we launched, and it was so exciting, wasn't it? Even though I've done, you know, quite a few compilations prior to that, this was very exciting.
It was exciting, yeah. Here's a track now by Nitro Deluxe called Let's Get Brutal. And I remember a club called The Asylum. I remember this track vividly, playing over the big PA there. I think Roger Perry was DJing, and it blew my mind. And as I was saying to you earlier, I went to try and find it in a record store. Oh, yeah, I didn't know what it was. Picked it up and I put this record on, and it was a track I was after. Fluke. I grabbed it. Millimeters.
since you're the one with the memory, what year did the first Nightingale Lich come
out? That's easy.
Go for it then, Mr. Cool.
It was 97. You know, pretty much we had the first house compilation in this country. By the time we had done Nightingale Lich 3, you know, they were popping up everywhere. But I do believe those were the days, you try it now, impossible. Those were the days when they would just go, New Zealand? Hey, sure, why not? Give us $500.
We broke a lot of those records for those guys, you know. They were great records. I was pleased to be playing them. But
now when people say, oh, man, why aren't you doing any more of those nice and Illich things? Well, it is because you can't do them now unless you have got, you know, large amounts of money. And you can't advance large amounts of money now because CD sales are so, you know, average. So that's why we don't do them anymore. I'm so proud of the compilations because the stories we get, there's countless, I'm serious, countless stories. People come to me and go, man, you won't believe this. But here, I think, is one of the best. And it comes from a guy who just, he just doesn't bullshit. He's a straight up guy. And he's a businessman, a young businessman. He travels a lot. And he came up to me one day and he said, you won't believe it. He said, I was in Egypt, out in the desert, in a four-wheel drive, and he pulled up at this tiny little settlement to get some supplies. He thought, what the hell is that sound? I know that sound from my memory. I know that sound. And he walked over, and there was this bunch of young Arabs squatting around a ghetto blaster with camels, and they had a nice and Ehrlich CD. So that is incredible. Couldn't talk to them because he didn't know the lingo, but they were just saying, and he was trying to go, but I know these guys, these from my country, you know. Yeah. And
yeah, well, it was, I mean, it was an amazing time, and it was all very new to me. Even, you know, I've always been quite private, but I walking around Auckland City and seeing these huge posters up of me on there and smelly here with his glasses on, and the CD was literally being played everywhere. I couldn't believe it. It was in the records cafes. Yeah. It was great, you know. Got a real buzz out of it. But we sort of had a bit of an idea that the popularity was kind of growing because we had a little party at Herzog, a club on K Road, and
remember Herzog with all those
religious icons?
Yeah, that's right. And Peter said, "Oh, how do you think we're going to go?" You know, so we shared a cab there, and we came around the corner in the taxi, and there was this huge queue down the street. I thought, this is all right.
Yeah,
and we had a great night. And then when the first CD came out, we had the release party at Coast, didn't we?
Oh.
And it was just
legend.
It was frightening, to be honest with you, because the floor was bouncing and the fish came out of the fish tank and things like that. But yeah, it was amazing, wasn't it? Yeah.
And the thing about it was that you, you know, you weren't a househead. You know, your roots were reggae and dub, but there was something in the music and in the crowd that was attracted to it that made it a good place to be. Yeah. So you'd come to our gigs. And there would be kind of rockers at our gigs. There would be, you know, goths. There would be, everybody would be there. And that's how we feel about music.
Mm, absolutely.
We're not into, as you can see by the way we're dressed, we're not into any sort of style. We just, you know, and we were proudest of that, the fact that we had a inclusive sort of thing as opposed to an exclusive, you know. So it was... we were so happy.
Yeah, you know, a lot of it was to do with our background as well, and that was a thing. And Peter had been a rocker, so all the rockers thought, "Oh, it's cool to be into this." You know, there was nothing embarrassing about it. And I had all my friends from Manabit Grammar School, and they were all it was just a complete package, you know.
So there also came a point once the CDs had become, you know, the mix CDs had become fairly successful, that people actually wanted you guys as a live act.
Yeah.
They wanted to start booking Nice and Ehrlich to actually do events.
Yeah, it was like, you know, some of those parties we had at the St. James, you know, and really it was just him and I, you know, on our own, you know, selling these places out. And, you know, we were selling them out a week before every time, you know, and you know, it was huge. Pressure was gone. But that was, you know, remembering that there was nothing else on like that then. So we were lucky we had the market at that stage. So people bought the tickets. And it was, you know, it was a big night.
So as a result, you know, Bevan got to stand there and, you know, just play his tunes and hardly move. And I had to ape around like a chimpanzee for 3 hours, and it killed me. And the people say, why don't you do any more of those Nice and Ehrlich gigs? I can't. Jumping up on top of speakers. I was already in my 40s.
You were.
And he'd say, get down, matey. Get down, matey. And I'd go, I'm all right. Because he was straight and I was twisted.
To frighten me.
Yeah, I was lucky. I never you know, touch wood, I never got hurt, did I?
No, you didn't. And I didn't have the moves.
Pots and pans and no moves. Jesus, Harvey, why haven't we done that again?
Here's make a track funny, now. Matey. You ready?
Yeah.
Make it funny?
Yeah.
Pull yeah! You will like this one?
Here is a track now from Kraftwerk, which is remixed by Francois K, who was a legendary DJ, New York DJ, Frenchman though. It's called The Telephone Call. I loved Kraftwerk because they were stripped back and very minimal, yet very funky. It's hard to, I guess it sounds kind of odd, but they were at the same time.
Yeah, they were almost a conundrum. You know, they were like, how can you have funky Germans? But God, they were. Check this out.
The number you have reached has been disconnected.
it?
So there was three comps, and they came out about a year. So
they
were
a year apart, weren't they?
Yeah, so it was about 2001 or two that the last comp came out.
It would have been,
I'll never forget what's his name. Yeah. The gigs obviously kept going strong as ever. We did tours and everything, and we were having a fantastic time. And quite frankly, I did find it very hard emceeing, you know, for three to 4 hours. And, you know, I became less enthusiastic about doing them. And maybe I should have changed the shape of them. And, you know, but what was the last big one we did, Bev, was the New Year's Eve at St. James again.
That's
the
right, yeah.
The St. James will be absolutely, is one of the most precious memories I've held in it. And it hurts me dearly to see it, you know. Well, it's dead now, isn't it? It is gone. It's ex. Yeah. But, you know, I've had so many wonderful times. And that photo we took for Pavement on the stage at St. James.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I guess the last time we were there, I got lowered from the ceiling like James Bond on a rocket ship.
Oh, my God. So that was, New Year's Eve?
2006.
Must have been, yeah, was it?
And what was our last, what was the last one we've done, Bev? Was that it?
We sort of carried on doing it. We did one a couple of years ago at Stony Ridge, remember?
Stony Ridge, that's right. Mm-hmm. And another wonderful spot.
So, folks, the brand's still going. If you need a nice and early gig,
we're
a little bit cheaper these days.
We don't want to sound like we're living in the past, but we are, you know, looking at reflected things that are reflected in years gone by. And on the show that I'm doing on Saturday mornings, Brighton Urlich, I'm not playing any house at all. It's a different thing. Bevan's not here, and I'm just going through more a retrospective. And there is a strange thread that joins those songs. I don't know what it is, but... You know, Bev, you know what it's like when you play a song and then another song calls out to you, goes, play me next.
Absolutely.
And you think, wonder why I did play that song next. Why do I put some Lou Reed on there? And, you know, but it's just fantastic. And the thing that BFM has given, you know, us so much opportunity. You know, we really couldn't have done it on any other station. And I'm still there at B for my third series now, and it's just the same. No one else would let me do what I'm doing here. When do you ever get that, Bev? You never get that in many places, do you?
You don't. That's right. It's funny because the station that we both ended up on, I remember the head honcho there saying to me that we want nice and early, it's 24 hours a day. That's what we're basing our radio station around. It was. I didn't know what to say.
You got to back yourself, and it's like we've always said this, Bevan, that the music is the best bouncer. The music will sort the people out at the door. They go, "Oh, I don't want this." And it's okay,
and
bye.
They'll leave.
Off you go. Bye. And then what you end up with is people there because they want to be there, and that's the club you want, and that's the show you want. You don't want people there because they think they should be there or they think this is cool. You know, you're there because you choose to be, and that's the thing about B as well is, you know, it's different from the other station is that, you know, when you talk to people on the phone, they could only be B listeners. They've got something in their voice that makes them a B listener, you know. And that's interesting, you know, once I've returned to start fielding those calls and that and hearing them, and they've all been listening for many, many years, you know, and they're a tough audience, no doubt about it. They're a tough audience.
Once you win them over, though, they're very loyal to you. And we've had people stuck by us for years now. They really have, you know.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here is probably the biggest song that Nice and Rich is known for. This is the one and only, the incredible Black Science Orchestra. This is the Heller and Farley remix of Sunshine.
It's a beautiful day.
Smiling
Gentlemen, thanks so much for coming in for Historical Society. I've got to say, BFM is 40 years old this year.
So am I.
Way! Isn't that amazing?
Don't go changing. You know, stick to your guns musically.
Be yourself. Be yourself. And I also, you know, I'll add my bit. You know, if it hadn't been for B, look what... I mean... I wouldn't recognise the present musical situation. Lord knows it'd have been what happened if the Germans won. It's that serious. If there was no BFM, it's the same as what happened if the Germans. And so through three distinct phases of my musical career, I've been on B, as the last independent. You know, I'm proud of it. Fly the flag, and Mikey's still there. And the ads are still funny, not as many as the Scotty and them would write, but they, it's still got that kick-ass attitude, and thank goodness. Bye.
Gentlemen, thank you.
Patrick, thank you for the Historical Society. It's been a wonderful trip hearing all this stuff. Good on you.
Yeah. Hey, Bevan, you can come back anytime. Peter will get you up to guest on the show sometime.
It's nice to be. I like the way your nose goes when you say it. Kind of like a fresh candy or something. Maybe he will come up one day. In his lederhosen.
You have been listening to the BFM Historical Society, a radio documentary series made to commemorate BFM's 40th anniversary. The Historical Society is broadcast every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. and is available as a podcast from BFM's website later on in the week. The BFM Historical Society is produced by Dubhead.